All witches are very conscious of stories. They can feel stories, in the same way that a bather in a little pool can feel the unexpected trout. Knowing how stories work is almost all the battle. For example, when an obvious innocent sits down with three experienced card sharpers and says, "How do you play this game, then?" someone is about to be shaken down until their teeth fall out. Magrat and Nanny Ogg sat side by side on the narrow bunk. Nanny was distractedly tickling Grebo's stomach while he purred.
"She'll get into terrible trouble if she uses magic to win," said Magrat. "And you know how she hates losing," she added.
Granny Weatherwax was not a good loser. From her point of view, losing was something that happened to other people.
"It's her ego," said Nanny Ogg. "Everyone's got one of them. An ego. And she's got a great big one. Of course, that's all part of being a witch, having a big ego."
"She's bound to use magic," said Magrat.
"It's tempting fate using magic in a game of chance," said Nanny Ogg. "Cheating's all right. That's practically fair. I mean, anyone can cheat. But using magic, oh, it's tempting fate."
"No, not fate," said Magrat darkly.
Nanny Ogg shivered.
"Come on," said Magrat. "We can't let her do it." "It's her ego," said Nanny Ogg weakly. "Terrible thing, a big ego."
"I got," said Granny, "three little pictures of kings and such like, and three of them funny number one cards."
The three men beamed and winked at one another.
"That's triple onion," said the one who had introduced Granny to the table, and who had turned out to be called Mr. Frank.
"Oh, and that's good, is it?"
"It means you win yet again, dear lady."
He pushed a pile of pennies towards her.
"Gosh," said Granny, "that means I've got, ooh, what would it be? Almost $5 now."
"Can't understand it," said Mr. Frank. "It must be the famous beginner's luck, eh?"
"Soon be poor men, if it goes on like this," said one of his companions. "She'll have the coats off our backs right enough," said the third man.
"Think we should give up right now," said Mr. Frank.
"Oh, no, I want to go on," said Granny, grinning anxiously. "I'm just getting the hang of it."
"Well, you'd better give us a sporting chance to win a little bit back," said Mr. Frank. "What about half a dollar a steak?"
"Oh, I reckon she'll want a dollar a steak, a sporting lady like her," said the third man.
Granny looked down at her pile of pennies. For a moment she looked uncertain, and then they could see she realised. How much could she lose the way the cards were going?
"Yes," she said, "a dollar a steak," she blushed. "This is exciting, isn't it?"
"Yeah," said Mr. Frank. He drew the pack towards him.
There was a horrible noise. All three men stared at the bar where shards of mirror were cascading to the floor. What happened? Granny gave him a sweet old smile. She hadn't appeared to look around.
"I reckon the glass he was polishing must have slipped right out of his hand and smashed right into the mirror," she said. "I do hope he doesn't have to pay for it out of his wages, the poor boy."
The men exchanged glances.
"Come on," said Granny. "I've got my dollar all ready."
Mr. Frank looked nervously at the ravaged frame. And then he shrugged. The movement dislodged something somewhere. There was a muffled snapping noise like a mousetrap carrying out the last rites. Mr. Frank went white and gripped his sleeve. A small metal contraption, all springs and twisted metal, fell out. A crumpled-up ace of cups was tangled up in it.
"Whoops!" said Granny.
Magrat peered through the window into the saloon.
"What's she doing now?"
hissed Nanny Ogg.
"She's grinning again," said Magrat.
Nanny Ogg shook her head.
"Ego," she said.
Granny Weatherwax had that method of play that has reduced professional gamblers to incoherent rage throughout the multiverse. She held her cards tightly cupped in her hands, a few inches from her face, allowing the merest fraction of each one to protrude. She glared at them as if daring them to offend her, and she never seemed to take her eyes off them except to watch the dealing. And she took far too long, and she never, ever took risks. After 25 minutes she was down $1, and Mr. Frank was sweating. Granny had already helpfully pointed out 3 times that he'd accidentally dealt cards off the bottom of the deck, and she'd asked for another pack, "because look, this one's got all little marks on the back." It was her eyes, that's what it was. Twice he'd folded on a perfectly good 3-card onion, only to find that she'd been holding a lousy double bagel. Then the 3rd time, thinking he'd worked out her play, he'd called her out and run a decent flush right into the maw of a 5-card onion that the old bag must have been patiently constructing for ages. And then his knuckles went white, and then the dreadful, terrible hag had said, "Have I won with all these little cards? Gosh, aren't I the lucky one?" And then she started humming when she looked at her cards. Normally the 3 of them would have welcomed this sort of thing. The teeth tappers, the eyebrow razors, the ear rubbers, they were as good as money in the sock under the mattress, to a man who knew how to read such things. But the appalling old crone was as transparent as a lump of coal, and the humming was insistent. You found yourself trying to follow the tune. It made your teeth tingle. Next thing, you were glumly watching while she laid down a measly broken flush in front of your even more measly 2-card onion and said, "What? Is it me again?" Mr. Frank was desperately trying to remember how to play cards without his sleeve device, a handy mirror, and a marked deck, in the teeth of a hum like a fingernail down a blackboard. It wasn't as if the ghastly old creature even knew how to play properly. After an hour, she was $4 ahead, and when she said, "I am a lucky girl," Mr. Frank bit through his tongue. And then he got a natural great onion. There was no realistic way to beat a great onion. It was something that happened to you once or twice in a lifetime. She folded. The old bitch folded. She abandoned one blasted dollar, and she folded. Magrat peered through the window again. "What's happening?" said Nanny.
"They all look very angry."
Nanny took off her hat and removed her pipe. She lit it and tossed the match overboard.
"Oh, she'll be humming, you mark my words. She's got a very annoying hum, has Esme."
Nanny looked satisfied.
"Has she started cleaning out her ear yet?"
"Don't think so."
"No one cleans out her ear like Esme."
She was cleaning out her ear. It was done in a very ladylike way, and the daft old baggage probably wasn't even aware she was doing it. She just kept inserting her little finger in her ear and swivelling it around. It made a noise like a small pool cue being chalked. It was displacement activity, that's what it was. They all cracked in the end. She folded again, and it had taken him bloody 5 bloody minutes to put together a bloody double onion.
"I remember," said Nanny Og, "when she came over our house for the party when King Verence got crowned, and we played Chase My Neighbour Up the Passage with the kiddies for halfpennies. She accused Jason's youngest of cheating and sulked for a week afterwards."
"Was he cheating?"
"I expect so," said Nanny proudly. "The trouble with Esme is that she don't know how to lose. She's never had much practice."
"Lobsang Dibbler says sometimes you have to lose in order to win," said Magrat.
"Sounds daft to me," said Nanny. "That's Yen Buddhism, is it?"
"No, they're the ones who say you have to have lots of money to win," said Magrat.
The Yen Buddhists are the richest religious sect in the universe. They hold that the accumulation of money is a great evil and burden to the soul. They therefore, regardless of personal hazard, see it as their unpleasant duty to acquire as much as possible in order to reduce the risk to innocent people.
"In the path of the scorpion, the way to win is to lose every fight except the last one. You use the enemy's strength against himself."
"What, you get him to it himself, sort of thing?" said Nanny. "Sounds daft."
Magrat glowered.
"What do you know about it?" she said, with uncharacteristic sharpness.
"What?"
"Well, I'm fed up," said Magrat. "At least I'm making an effort to learn things. I don't go around just bullying people and acting bad-tempered all the time."
Nanny took her pipe out of her mouth.
"I'm not bad-tempered," she said mildly. I wasn't talking about you.
Oh, well, Esme's always been bad-tempered, said Nanny. It comes natural to her.
And she hardly ever does real magic. What good is being a witch if you don't do magic? Why doesn't she use it to help people?
Nanny peered at her through the pipe smoke.
"'Cause she knows how good she'd be at it, I suppose,' she said. "'Anyway, I've known her a long time, known the whole family. "'All the weatherwaxes is good at magic, even the men. "'They've got this magical streak in 'em, kind of a curse. "'Anyway, she thinks you can't help people with magic, not properly.
"'It's true, too.'
"'Then what good?'
"'Nanny prodded at the pipe with a match.'
"'I seem to recall she come over and helped you out when you had that spot of plague in your village,' she said. "'Worked the clock around, I recall. "'Never known her not treat someone ill who needed it, even when they, you know, were pretty oozy. "'And when the big old troll that lives under Broken Mountain came down here for help because his wife was sick and everyone threw rocks at him, "'I remember it was Esme that went back with him and delivered the baby. "'Then when old Chicken Wire Hopkins threw a rock at Esme... A little while afterwards all his barns was mysteriously trampled flat in the night. She always said you can't help people with magic, but you can help them with skin, by doing real things, she meant.
I'm not saying she's not basically a nice person,
Magrat began.
Huh, I am. You'd have to go a long day's journey to find someone basically nastier than Esme, said Nanny Og. And this is me saying it. She knows exactly what she is. She was born to be good, and she don't like it.
Nanny tapped her pipe out on the rail and turned back to the saloon.
What you got to understand about Esme, my girl, she said, is that she's got a psychology as well as a big ego. I'm damn glad I ain't.
Granny was $12 ahead. Everything else in the saloon had stopped. You could hear the distant splash of the paddles and the cry of the leadman. Granny won another $5 with a 3-card onion.
"'What do you mean, a psychology?' said Magrat. "'Have you been reading books?'
Nanny ignored her.
"'The thing to watch out for now,' she said, "'is when she goes under her breath. "'That comes after the ear cleaning. "'It generally means... She's planning something.
Mr. Frank drummed his fingers on the table, realised to his horror that he was doing it, and brought 3 new cards to cover his confusion. The old baggage didn't appear to notice. He stared at the new hand. He ventured $2 and bought 1 more card. He stared again. What were the odds, he thought, against getting a great onion twice in one day? The important thing was not to panic.
"'I think,' he heard himself say, "'that I may hazard another $2.'
He glanced at his companions. They obediently folded one after the other.
"'Well, I don't know,' said Granny, apparently talking to her cards. She cleaned her ear again. "'What do you call it when, you know, when you want to put more money in, sort of thing?'
"'It's called raising,' said Mr. Frank, his knuckles going white.
"'I'll do one of those raisings, then. $5, I think.'
Mr. Frank's knees ground together.
"'I'll see you and raise you $10,' he snapped.
"'I'll do that, too,' said Granny.
"'I can go another $20.'
"'I—'
Granny looked down, suddenly crestfallen.
"'I've got a broomstick.'
A tiny alarm bell rang somewhere at the back of Mr. Frank's mind, but now he was galloping headlong to victory.
Right.
He spread the cards on the table. The crowd sighed. He began to pull the pot towards him. Granny's hand closed over his wrist.
I ain't put my cards down yet, she said archly.
You don't need to, snapped Mr. Frank. There's no chance you could beat that, madam.
"'I can if I can cripple it,' said Granny. "'That's why it's called Cripple Mr. Onion, ain't it?'
He hesitated.
"'But you could only do that if you had a perfect 9-card run,' he burbled, staring into the depths of her eyes.
Granny sat back.
"You know," she said calmly, "I thought I had rather a lot of these black pointy ones. That's good, is it?" She spread the hand. The collective audience made a sort of little gasping noise in unison. Mr. Frank looked around wildly.
"Oh, very well done, madam," said an elderly gentleman.
There was a round of polite applause from the crowd, the big, inconvenient crowd.
Yes, said Mr. Frank. Yes, well done. You're a very quick learner, aren't you?
Quicker than you. You owe me $55 and a broomstick, said Granny.
Magrat and Nanny Ogg were waiting for her as she swept out.
Here's your broom, she snapped, and I hopes you've got all your stuff together, because we're leaving.
Why? Said Magrat.
Because as soon as it gets quiet, some men are going to come looking for us.
They scurried after her towards their tiny cabin.
You weren't using magic, said Magrat.
No.
And not cheating, said Nanny Ogg.
No, just headology, said Granny.
Where did you learn to play like that?
Nanny demanded. Granny stopped. They cannoned into her.
Remember last winter when old Mother Dismas was taken really bad and I went up and sat up with her every night for almost a month?
Yes.
You sit up every night dealing cripple Mr. Onion with someone who's got a detached retina in a second sight, and you soon learn how to play, said Granny.
Dear Jason and everyone, what you get more of in foreign parts is smells. I am getting good at them. Esme is shouting at everyone. I think she thinks they're being foreign just to spite her. Don't know when I last saw her enjoy herself so much. Mind you, they need a good shaking up, if you ask me. For lunch, we stopped somewhere and they did steak tartare. And they acted very snooty just because I wanted mine well done. All the best, Mum.
The moon was closer here. The orbit of the Discworld's moon meant that it was quite high when it passed over the high ramtops. Here, nearer to the rim, it was bigger and more orange.
Like a pumpkin, said Nanny Ogg. I thought we said we weren't going to mention pumpkins, said Magrat.
Well, we didn't have any supper, said Nanny. And there was another thing. Except during the height of summer, the witches weren't used to warm nights. It didn't seem right, gliding along under a big orange moon over dark foliage that clicked and buzzed and whirred with insects.
"We must be far enough from the river now," said Magrat. "Can't we land, Granny? No one could have followed us."
Granny Weatherwax looked down. The river in this countryside meandered in huge, glistening curves, taking 20 miles to cover 5. The land between the snaking water was a patchwork of hillsides and woodlands. A distant glow might have been Genua itself.
"Riding a broomstick all night is a right pain in the itinerant," said Nanny.
"Oh, all right.
There's a town over there," said Magrat, "and a castle."
"Oh, not another one."
"It's a nice little castle," said Magrat. "Can't we just call in? I'm fed up with inns."
Granny looked down. She had very good night vision.
"Are you sure that's a castle?" she said.
"I can see the turrets and everything," said Magrat. "Of course it's a castle."
"I can see more than turrets," said Granny. "I think we'd better have a look at this, Gither."
There was never any noise in the sleeping castle, except in the late summer when ripe berries fell off the bramble vines and burst softly on the floor. And sometimes birds would try to nest in the thorn thickets that now filled the throne room from floor to ceiling. But they never got very far before they too fell asleep. Apart from that, you'd need very keen hearing indeed to hear the growth of shoots and the opening of buds. It had been like this for 10 years. There was no sound in the
"Open up there!
Bony, fidy travellers seeking succour."
No sound in the
"Here, give us a leg up, Magrat. Right, now."
There was a tinkle of broken glass.
"You've broken their window."
Not a sound in the
"You'll have to offer to pay for it, you know."
The castle gate swung open slowly. Nanny Ogg peered around it at the other two witches while pulling thorns and burrs from her hair.
"It's bloody disgusting in here," she said. "There's people asleep all over the place with spiders' webs all over them. You were right, Esme. There's been magic going on."
The witches pushed their way through the overgrown castle. Dust and leaves had covered the carpets. Young sycamores were making a spirited attempt to take over the courtyard. Vines festooned every wall. Granny Weatherwax pulled a slumbering soldier to his feet. Dust billowed off his clothes.
"Wake up," she demanded.
said the soldier, and slumped back.
"It's like that everywhere," said Magrat, fighting her way through a thicket of bracken that was growing up from the kitchen regions. "There's the cooks all snoring, and nothing but mould in the pots. There's even mice asleep in the pantry."
"Hmm," said Granny. "There'll be a spinning wheel at the bottom of all this, you mark my words."
"A Black Alice job," said Nannyog.
"Looks like it," said Granny. Then she added quietly, "Or someone like her."
"Now there was a witch who knew how stories worked," said Nanny. "She used to be in as many as three of them at once."
Even Magrat knew about Black Alice. She was said to have been the greatest witch who ever lived. Not exactly bad, but so powerful it was sometimes hard to tell the difference. When it came to sending palaces to sleep for 100 years, or getting princesses to spin straw into glod, Black Alice wasn't very good with words either. They had to give him quite a lot of money to go away and not make a scene. No one did it better than Black Alice.
"I met her once," said Nanny, as they climbed the castle's main staircase, which was a cascade of old man's trousers. "Old Deliria Skibley took me to see her once when I was a girl. Of course, she was getting pretty eccentric by then. Gingerbread houses, that kind of thing." She spoke sadly, as one might talk about an elderly relative who'd taken to wearing her underwear outside her clothes.
"That must have been before those two children shut her up in her own oven," said Magrat, untangling her sleeve from a briar.
"Yeah, sad that. I mean, she didn't really ever eat anyone," said Nanny.
"Well, not often. I mean, there was talk, but..."
"That's what happens," said Granny. "You get too involved with stories, you get confused. You don't know what's really real and what isn't. And they get you in the end. They send you weird in the head. I don't like stories. They're not real. I don't like things that ain't real."
She pushed open a door.
"Ah, a chamber," she said sourly. "Could even be a bower."
"Doesn't the stuff grow quickly?" said Magrat.
"Part of the time spell," said Granny. "Ah, oh, there she is. Knew there'd be someone somewhere."
There was a figure lying on a bed in a thicket of rose bushes.
"And there's the spinning wheel," said Nanny, pointing to a shape just visible in a clump of ivy.
"Don't touch it," said Granny.
"Don't worry. I'll pick it up by the treadle and pitch it out the window."
"How do you know all this?" said Magrat.
"'Cause it's a rural myth," said Nanny. "It's happened lots of times."
Granny Weatherwax and Magrat looked down at the sleeping figure of a girl of about 13, almost silvery under the dust and pollen.
"Oh, isn't she pretty?" sighed Magrat, the generous-hearted.
From behind them came the crash of a spinning wheel on some distant cobbles, and then Nanny Og appeared, brushing her hands.
"Seen it happen 12 times," she said.
"No, you ain't," said Granny.
"Once, anyway," said Nanny, unabashed. "And I heard about it 12 times. Everyone has. Rural myth, like I said. Everyone's heard about it happening in their cousin's friend's neighbour's village."
"That's because it does," said Granny.
Granny picked up the girl's wrist.
"She's asleep because she'll have got a—"
Nanny said. Granny turned.
"I know, I know, I know, right? I know as well as you do. You think I don't know?"
She bent over the limp hand.
"That's fairy godmothering, this is," she added, half to herself. "Always do it impressively, always meddling, always trying to be in control. Heh! Someone got a bit of poison. Send everyone to sleep for 100 years. Do it the easy way. All this for one prick. As if that was the end of the world."
She paused. Nanny Og was standing behind her. There was no possible way she could have detected her expression.
"Githa."
"Yes, Esme?" said Nanny Og innocently.
"I can feel you grinning. You can save the tuppenny ha'penny psycholology for them that wants it."
Granny shut her eyes and muttered a few words.
"Shall I use my wand?" said Magrat hesitantly.
"Don't you dare," said Granny,
and went back to her muttering. Nanny nodded. "She's definitely getting a bit of colour back," she said. A few minutes later, the girl opened her eyes and stared up blearily at Granny Weatherwax.
"Time to get up," said Granny, in an unusually cheerful voice. "You're missing the best part of the decade."
The girl tried to focus on Nanny, then on Magrat, and then looked back at Granny Weatherwax.
"You," she said.
Granny raised her eyebrows and looked at the other two.
"Me?"
"You are still here?"
"Still?" said Granny. "Never been here before in me life, miss."
"But..."
The girl looked bewildered. And frightened, Magrat noticed.
"I'm like that myself in the mornings, dear," said Nanny Og, taking the girl's other hand and patting it. "Never at me best till I've had a cup of tea. I expect everyone else will be waking up any minute. Of course, it'll take them a while to clean the rats' nests out of the kettles. Esme?"
Granny was staring at a dust-covered shape on the wall.
"Meddling," she whispered.
"What's up, Esme?" Granny Weatherwax strode across the room and wiped the dust off a huge, ornate mirror.
"Ha!" she said, and spun round. "We'll be going now," she said.
"But I thought we were going to have a rest. I mean, it's nearly dawn," said Magrat.
"No sense in outstaying our welcome," said Granny as she left the room.
"But we haven't even had a..."
Magrat began. She glanced at the mirror. It was a big oval one, in a gilt frame. It looked perfectly normal. It wasn't like Granny Weatherwax to be frightened of her own reflection.
"She's in one of her moods again," said Nanny Og. "Come on, no sense in staying here."
She patted the bewildered princess on the head. "Cheerio, miss. Couple of weeks with a broom and an axe, and you'll soon have the old place looking like new."
"She looked as if she recognised Granny," said Magrat, as they followed the stiff, hurrying figure of Esme Weatherwax down the stairs.
"Well, we know she doesn't, don't we?" said Nanny Og. "Esme has never been in these parts in her life."
"But I still don't see why we have to rush off," Magrat persisted. "I expect people will be jolly grateful that we've broken the spell and everything."
The rest of the palace was waking up. They jogged past guards, staring in amazement at their cobwebbed uniforms and the bushes that were growing everywhere. As they crossed the forested courtyard, an older man in faded robes staggered out of a doorway and leaned against the wall, trying to get his bearings. Then he saw the accelerating figure of Granny Weatherwax.
"Yo!" he shouted, and "Guards!"
Nanny Og didn't hesitate. She snatched Magrat's elbow and broke into a run, catching up with Granny Weatherwax at the castle gates. A guard, who was better at mornings than his colleague, staggered forward and made an attempt to bar their way with his pike, but Granny just pushed at it and swiveled him around gently. Then they were outside and running for the broomsticks, leaning against a convenient tree. Granny snatched at hers without stopping, and for once it fired up on almost the first attempt. An arrow whiffled past her hat and stuck in a branch.
"I don't call that gratitude," said Magrat as the brooms glided up and over the trees. "A lot of people are never their best just after waking up," said Nanny.
"Everyone seemed to think they knew you, Granny," said Magrat.
Granny's broomstick jerked in the wind.
"They didn't," she shouted. "They never saw me before. All right."
They flew on in a troubled silence for a while. Then Magrat, who in Nanny Og's opinion had an innocent talent for treading on dangerous ground, said,
"I wonder if we did the right thing. I'm sure it was a job for a handsome prince."
"Eh," said Granny, who was riding ahead. "And what good would that be? Cutting your way through a bit of bramble is how you can tell he's going to be a good husband, is it? That's fairy godmotherly thinking, that is. Going around inflicting happy endings on people whether they want them or not, eh?"
"There's nothing wrong with happy endings," said Magrat, hotly.
"Listen. Happy endings is fine if they turn out happy," said Granny, glaring at the sky. "But you can't make 'em for other people. Like, the only way you could make a happy marriage is by cutting their heads off as soon as they say, 'I do.' Yes? You can't make happiness."
Granny Weatherwax stared at the distant city.
"All you can do," she said, "is make an ending."